And now back to a guy who lives in a van across the street from me, Mark Maron.
All right. All right, Jim. We're back from what?
We're back.
What do you mean we're back? Oh, the Clippers. What a game that was tonight. My God. But not half as interesting. How are you, folks? We're doing the pre-Mark Maron show. We're coming in the middle here, kind of. But this was really the beginning. So let me say a happy St. Patrick's Day to all the geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians out there with no sense of humor, all you lurking conservatives. I hope you're not too drunk. I hope you're taking it easy, playing it safe. I myself, Not Irish. I got to be honest with you. I've been mistaken for Irish many times in my life. I've been called Mark Moran. Which is an Irish name. Not Irish. As a matter of fact, when I lived in Boston, I went through a period, Jason the Jew from Wisconsin, I went through a period where I actually had a certain amount of contempt for the Irish. I'll admit it. I had a certain amount of contempt. It all was revolving around a police officer named O'Brien, who on the day John Belushi died, pulled me over, asked me for my insurance card, didn't have it, had my card and my car impounded, towed my car, called me a cab. And I got home and I found out John Belushi was dead, so it was compounding. And then I go to settle the ticket with this officer O'Brien, and I'm pulled into an office with a magistrate of some kind, and they're both sitting there. I think his name was Halloran. All right, so I got O'Brien and Halloran looking at me. And O'Brien says, well, I think we're going to let you off. It's Easter. And then Halloran looks at me and goes, yeah, it's Passover, too. Like basically saying, Jew,
yeah.
Throw you a bone there, Jew. And when you live in Boston, it's interesting. It went away. It was not really a racist thing. It was a contempt that I felt, that I thought there was a conspiracy of Irish people that didn't like me.
You see, in San Francisco, they had friendly Irish cops there. Like they had Brendan O'Smarty.
Remember Brendan, him? Sure. Brendan O'Smarty, of course.
He was the, one cop had a little ventriloquist dummy he'd walk around with, and his name was...
Are you making this up, Jim?
No, his name was Captain Brendan O'Smarty.
Get out of here.
And he...
What about Captain Brendan McDonald, P.W. McDonald? He's the only hardcore Irish Mick bastard that we got in the place.
Yeah, he's drunk.
He's the only one. Are you wasted? Are you been boozing it up all day, McDonald?
Belligerent.
How about this guy, the chairman of St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York City? John Dunleavy. Man, this guy said some stuff. I can't believe what he said. I mean, I guess I can believe it. Brendan tells me it's not that unusual for Irish people to be racist, belligerent bastards. But look at this guy. He tells the newspaper, the gay organization, the Irish Gay and Lesbian Organization, Irish Lesbian and Gay Organization, the ILGO, ILGO, wanted to march. They want to march every year, and they always tell them no, and they always get pissed off. But this year, this guy, John Dunleavy, says, quote, if an Israeli group wants to march in New York, do you allow neo-Nazis into their parade? If African-Americans are marching in Harlem, do you have to let the Ku Klux Klan into their parade? People have rights. If we let the ILGO in, is it the Irish Prostitute Association next? Unquote. Well, I don't think they'd really label themselves, and I bet you there was a few Irish prostitutes already marching in that parade. But what the hell? Wait, and Brendan and I were talking about this before the show. Why the hell would the gay and lesbian organization even want to be affiliated with this bastard? I mean, how badly do they want to wear green? What can really be done with green? What is the big deal about marching this parade other than acceptance and recognition? But these people are thick-headed monsters. This guy Dunleavy is a thick-headed monster. And he's making reference to them being Nazis. How about what he just said? Doesn't he have any reflection here?
You know, St. Patrick was a thick-headed monster, too.
But he's a snake chaser.
No, that's the Pied Piper. Is this the same thing, Pied Piper?
St. Patrick chased all the snakes out, didn't he? Come on, McDonald, get on the mic.
Come on, Irish guy.
I mean, that's one of those. It's like, you know, Santa Claus lives in the North Pole.
Oh, come on, believe it. It's your people. He chased the snakes out, saved the people from the snakes, for God's sake.
Come on, you toothless island monkey.
Embrace your heritage.
How about the pew poll? P-U for Bush. Pew. P-pew. P-U. Pew.
Pew poll.
Dude. 33% approval rating. Kaka.
That's good.
The guy is over. And this is the hilarious thing. 48%, virtually half the country said, they had this list of words. It was beautiful. 48% of the people that were polled said that Bush was incompetent, an idiot, and a liar. And this is a definite contrast from Americans who answered the same question 3 years ago with the one-word descriptions. They said honest, integrity. And then we had a little discussion before the show here today about another word on here, because there's a bunch of words that you have: incompetent, you have idiot, you have liar. Then there was also some people said a few, 14% or less, said honest. But there are other choices. There was ass. There was jerk. There was untrustworthy. And then there was Christian. And we couldn't figure out how that was being used, because that could go either way. It could be like, he's a Christian. Oh, or it's like, he's Christian. See, it's that simple. Did you hear the difference? It's like, Christian. Christian.
You see, I think the problem here is they also said the same thing about Gilligan, yet most of America watched Gilligan every week and couldn't get away from it.
People are jumping ship, man. I think the Democrats have a real chance in the Senate races in 2006. Gilligan couldn't turn the ship around, man. Neither can Bush. That's what I'm saying.
See, what we need is the professor.
Oh, there's plenty of professors. They're all spinning it however they want, but they're not fixing the ship. It's over, buddy. The minnow's not, it's not going again.
You think the Democrats are going to pull it out?
They're going to pull out a few. I got very excited about an article I read today, and then did a little research on it. I think that we have a, I don't know if we've got a shot at the Senate. Brendan McDonald seems to feel like we have a shot at the House, but the Senate is not as far away as you might think. There's some other stuff we wanted to talk about tonight, but we do have a short show. A lot of people had a little problem with Lori David and her environmentalist angle. It's funny how we eat our own sometimes. That there are people out there that even if somebody's just trying to help a little bit, it's not going to be enough. Yeah, well, what about the meat, which is what you said, and you have a good argument there, and we're going to talk about that.
I didn't say it that way, but yeah.
Okay. I know, but it's all part of the same thing, but it's interesting how people will take issue with members of their own, not unlike the Dunleavy and the gay Irish people. Some liberals hate other liberals for being arrogant. All right, so we got the short order news coming up. Alex Gibney, the director of Enron, the smartest guys in the room, is going to be on the phone with us momentarily. He's out at South by Southwest. And we have Congressman Richard Martin in, Republican congressman. That should be interesting. And Cardinal Milfington.
St. Patrick's Day Parade on Friday. Bright blue skies were overhead in Manhattan, but along Fifth Avenue, it was all green. Crazy hats, jackets, and painted faces as far as the eye could see provided the landscape. Danny Mann came in from Rhode Island. He attends every year dressed as an Irish clown.
Parade starts at 11, gets done at 5, and just hours of moshing. It's the best parade of the world. It's just so exciting. And
a lot of fun, right?
It's a blast.
More than a million folks lined the parade route to see 150,000 marchers and 400 marching bands. People came from all over the world just to see the parade, including from Ireland. Many say it's unlike anything they've ever seen before. The man who created a fashion powerhouse and helped make the late Jacqueline Kennedy a glamorous first lady has died. The family of Oleg Cassini says he died Friday at the age of 92. Cassini's wife, Marianne, says the designer suffered a broken blood vessel in his head and died in a Long Island hospital. Cassini chronicled his days at the Kennedy White House in a book called A Thousand Days of Magic, Dressing Jacqueline Kennedy for the White House. He said he had designed over 300 outfits for Jacqueline Kennedy. The U.S. military says its joint offensive, dubbed Operation Swarmer, is an indication that Iraq's army is becoming more effective and taking greater control of the country. The joint U.S.-Iraqi offensive, which is targeting insurgents in the Samarra area, continues, with General Peter Chiarelli saying he believes more operations like Swarmer are on the horizon as more large urban areas are turned over to Iraqi forces. U.S. troop withdrawals from Iraq hinge on the capability of the Iraqi army as they face a raging insurgency. Crews battling fires in the Texas Panhandle yesterday contained four new fires. It broke out in the parched region, wildfires racing across more than 1,000 square miles this month as strong winds drove the flames across fields of dead grass. The heavy smoke from the new fires shut down Interstate 40 for a time during the afternoon. Rains have moved east into Oklahoma, but remain in the forecast for the Panhandle over the next 2 days as well. This is Air America Radio News.
Live from Burbank, California, the world capital of pity sex, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now his favorite comic strip is Funky Winker Bean, Mark Maron.
It is Funky Winker Bean. You're absolutely right. It is my favorite comic. How are you, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes? Bloody, 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 bloody. I already did it. I already did it. I felt like I did it once before. About 10 minutes ago, I did that already. Happy Thanksgiving. No, St. Patrick's Day. You know, it's a holiday. Something you eat, you drink, whatever you're going to do.
St. Swithin's
Day. You know, I went to Ireland, and I have to say that despite the fact that I am not Irish, I had no intrinsic connection to the country, I thought it was one of the most beautiful places I had ever been in my life. I spent a week in Kilkenny, Ireland. It was beautiful. I went to the comedy festival there, and I had a moment that I've shared. I'll share it one more time. I think I've shared it before, but not since I've been in L.A. I had a moment that summed up the entire history of Irish literature. It was a profound moment. I was walking back from one of the shows, one of the parties. It was like 2:30 in the morning in Kilkenny. It's like the week of the festival is like spring break or something. People literally come to the town to drink. And there's people all over the place. But it's 2:30, it's late, and I'm walking back to the hotel, and there's this heavy-set guy standing in the middle of the street, alone, isolated, and he's holding a pint glass that's half full. There's no open bar in sight, and he's just sitting there. And he sees me and a couple other people walking towards him. And he looks at us, and he raises his glass, and he goes, "It's good to be happy!" And then he drops the glass down, and he bends his head over and goes, "There's no hope." And to me, that seemed to sum up the entire history of Irish literature and Irish experience. And I'm not being stereotypical here. It was an endearing moment, and it resonated with me. So let's do this. We've got Alex Gibney coming up. He's the filmmaker who did Smartest Guys in the Room. He's got a new film. He's out at the South by Southwest Film Festival. But right now, a lot happened in the world today. We want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush welcomed Irish Prime Minister Bernie Ahern on Capitol Hill today for a traditional St. Patrick's Day lunch. Things got off to an awkward start when Bush asked Ahern if he'd, quote, ever been to the magic spring that the shamrock shakes flow from, unquote. Starbucks will begin using sophisticated tracking devices to monitor coffee shipments out of Guatemala. The system will keep an eye on shipping containers to ensure that children headed for black market adoption and nuclear devices will maintain their freshness. Despite reports to the contrary, a spokesman for Michael Jackson says the singer has not abandoned his Neverland Ranch in Santa Barbara County. Quote, "I'll never leave Neverland," unquote, said Jackson. Quote, "That's where my Oompa Loompas, unicorns, and kitty porn, I mean candy corn, is," unquote. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. Kitty porn, I mean candy corn.
He just really incriminated himself right now.
Candy corn.
By saying that.
Man. You know, this is nice. I'm going to see my mother tomorrow, which means, you know what that means, Jim? I feel fat.
You're going to get beaten.
I feel fat. No, I'm not going to get beaten. My self-esteem is going to get put through the ringer. That's how I was brought up.
I met your mom. She was a very wonderful lady.
Oh, give her a few. She'll chisel away at you, and then all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, my God, how come I feel drained? That's mean of me to say about my mother. My mother is a lovely woman who I've just had a really uncomfortable relationship most of my life. But, you know, if you're lucky enough to get older and they get older too, a lot of that stuff starts to dissipate and you just don't have the energy to maintain it. Let's get on with it. The other night we talked about, we talked with the filmmakers behind the documentary, The Big Buy, How Tom DeLay Stole Congress. We hope that film has some impact and can actually affect change, at least get that guy out of office. One documentary that got a lot of people talking last year was Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room. It was released in theaters last April, came out on DVD just 2 weeks before the Enron trial started in January. The director, Alex Gibney, joins us on the phone right now. He's at South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin with his latest film. Good evening, Alex. How are you, Alex?
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Let's talk about this movie, the release of the DVD. Did you plan to do it in conjunction with the trial?
Yeah, it was originally planned to be released the same day the trial started, but the trial started a week late. So we stuck with our original plan and released it at the same time. We thought it would be a useful handbook for people watching the trial.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And there seems to be a whole trend right now of documentaries that are made, not necessarily quickly, but in a way that makes them easily distributed and seem to be used as social outreach. It seems to be very popular. Is that do you consider yourself part of that trend?
I guess so. I mean, to be honest, it took a long time to make the Enron film. It's just this whole legal process has been going on for so long that it may have seemed like we were jumping on the bandwagon. But, I mean, it took a good 10 to 11 months to make the film, and this was, you know, a couple of years after, the whole Enron debacle had happened. But then the trial took a long time, too, to get started. So I wouldn't say it's that similar to the Bob Greenwald
model. Yeah. So now, during the making of this, I have to assume that there were points, or maybe you still have it, where you were just seething at the crimes of these guys. Did you find that? I mean, I know as a documentary filmmaker, you have to be somewhat objective, but it's pretty clear that these guys are guilty. And did you find yourself filled with contempt?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, that's how I started. I was pretty angry when I started.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in order to make a film, I think, in a way you have to, and I wanted to make a film about the perpetrators. There's some about the horrific, economic tragedy that this story represents. But at the same time, I thought it would be more of a long-lasting benefit to make a film about the perpetrators and just how this happened. And inevitably, when you do that, I think, you end up investigating them as human beings, because if they're monsters, if they're pure monsters, then they're just pure exceptions to the rule. They don't have anything to do with us. They're completely set apart. So at a peculiar moment in time, I actually found myself, having some sympathy for them. And then, of course, by the time I watched the film at the end, I was angry all over again. But I think you have to go through that process.
So you're saying that out of context, you could actually be sympathetic to them and find some empathy because they're human beings, but once you place them into the context of the film and of the crime, you realize that they are conscienceless bastards.
Yeah, something like that.
Right. So now, I imagine you cannot stop following the trial.
I was just down there.
Oh, really? And
yeah.
Did you go in? Were you hanging out? Or
I did. I went in. I rode up the elevator with Jeff Skilling.
Really? Did you say, Jeff, dude, I made the movie?
No, I didn't. I was curious to know if he would recognize me. He claims to everybody who's talked to him about the film that he hasn't seen it and he has no plans to. But I found it interesting to ride up at the elevator with him. It was a moment of real intimacy.
And that guy probably downloaded a copy of it off the internet first thing.
Yeah, apparently, the film apparently played in Houston a little bit like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people would go to the theater and they'd hoot and they'd holler and they'd scream, and when Skilling and Lay apparently came on, they would boo and they would hiss. But a few executives, and I'm not sure exactly which ones, actually disguised themselves in order to be able to go into the theater and not be recognized.
That's interesting.
I don't know if Skilling was one of them or not.
Wow, that'd be interesting. It's interesting. You'd think that if it was like Rocky Horror, they'd boo and hiss and scream, and at some point they'd actually turn the projector off. To honor the blackouts, of course.
Right, exactly.
So, now, what do you think? Skilling is definitely going down with this thing, right?
You know, I can't say that either of them, either Lay or Skilling, are necessarily going down. I mean, in pure legal terms, I made a film that was a morality tale. And mm-hmm. In moral terms, what they did was utterly reprehensible. But in legal terms, the big problem that the prosecution has is that because a lot of this was a wink and a nod, a secret, secret side deals, of course, when you make secret side deals, you don't write them down. And yet the the defense has a heyday in court saying, well, wait a minute, let me see if I understand this. There's no written record of the secret side deals between you, so we only have your word. So evidence in this case is tricky, though I do think the prosecution is doing a pretty good job.
So now that you've moved past the Enron project, obviously you're going to continue following it. Before I move on to that, doesn't it just, you know, tick you off and make you squirm that these guys are probably not going to do any time, that they are probably going to go on to, maybe not Skilling, but certainly Kenway will go on to some sort of lucrative deal somehow. He will continue to make a living. He will be taken care of. It makes me very deeply upset.
Well, let me say two things about that. First of all, I don't want to paint the picture as if they're certainly going to get off. I don't think that's the case at all. And if they're convicted, they're going away for a long, long time. I'd be surprised if they ever get out again. But if they do get off, you know, part of the thing this whole prison thing, in a way, I think if Kenley were to be convicted, I think for me, the most beneficial punishment would be to sentence him to 15 to 20 years of serving as a grill man for the downtown McDonald's in Houston and making sure that he has to ride on public transportation and live in a public housing project.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be a more useful lesson for all of us.
And then they'd have to put a lien on his pay, and he'd have to keep that job for 200 years until he paid back maybe 1/100th of the money he ripped off from everybody. So what movie are you down there at South by Southwest with? What are you over there with?
Well, it's a complete break. I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of my time going back and forth between some of these music projects and some of the political films that I do. And I just finished, I didn't direct it, but I finished producing a film called Herbie Hancock Possibilities, which is all about Herbie Hancock and a record he's made called Possibilities, where he collaborated with a lot of unlikely pop stars. Everyone is diverse as somebody like Sting or Christina Aguilera or Annie Lennox and some other people. And what's great about the film is that it's really about creative generosity. You see these people in the studio, and Herbie was really very generous in terms of getting all these other high-octane stars to sit still, to letting the cameras be in there.
Mm-hmm.
You see step by step by step how people from very different musical disciplines kind of work stuff out in the studio, and it's really tremendously inspiring.
That sounds great. Now, you got distribution on that, and it's going to come out at some point?
Yeah, it's going to be in a limited theatrical release in April.
Great.
And then on DVD. It's an exciting film.
Now, quickly, what about this movie I hear you're making about Hunter S. Thompson?
I am. I'm doing that, you know, as we speak.
That's tremendous. What a guy.
Yeah, he was a wild character, and in a funny way, you know, a lot of what he was great about Hunter was obscured with the sort of the wild party animal stuff that he was famous for. You know, doing every kind of drug and every kind of
genius.
Alcohol.
He was a genius writer, great a great satirist.
Well, he was, and particularly early on with the Hell's Angels, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and then Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail. He was also a pretty good reporter, and so he had a raw comic touch, and he was unafraid to take on, you know, the powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think people in the press today could learn a few lessons from Hunter.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're in charge of the project. I like your work a lot, Alex Gibney. Thanks for joining us.
Great, Mark. Thanks for being with me.
You take care.
All right,
check
you too.
Okay, bye. That was Alex Gibney. His film, The Smartest Guys in the Room, about Enron, is out on DVD. If you haven't seen it, learn a little something, go get it. We're going to come back. Maybe Jim will do some music later. We're going to talk about Cardinal Milfington's going to be here, and Republican Congressman Richard Martin. It's 20 past. Stay with us.
And now back to a guy who's so popular, he's on pre-order. Mark Maron.
Happy Christmas. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy thanks. I mean, happy St. Patrick's Day. Never my favorite holiday. Because too many times when the Irish people get drunk, they want to play, let's scare the Jew. Have you ever played that game with them, Jason, the Jew from Wisconsin?
No.
Well, they don't say it like that. They're like, hey, look at that guy. That guy doesn't look like one of us. Let's make him uncomfortable.
Well, actually, I do look like one.
You do look Irish?
Sam's the red hair.
No, maybe you do. I don't know. You certainly don't look Jewish, but neither do I. Right? I don't, right? All right. The Bible's book of... I don't, though, right? Do I look Jewish to you, Jim?
Oh, no, not at all.
Thanks. The Bible's book of... What? What were you going to say? What, Jason? Say it.
I was going to say, maybe if you shave the beard off.
The beard, you think I should lose the payas too and stop wearing the black hat? It's a whole new thing I'm doing, but not Jewish. I'm doing it more of a, in a Dylan way. The Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Deer Gap, Tennessee. Your grace...
Heed my words, ye slithering servants of Eve's soiled loins. It is time to come thither and reap the bitter harvest of your tainted man-goo. For you have tarried too long in the fetid fields of fornication, and soon you will be but chaff in the devil's sin barn and Archer Daniels Midland Company. You may recall it, how left abdominal, look it up. I told you how a turkey crashed into the TV room of a terrified family. The week after that, I told you how a woman found a vicious crocodile in her backyard pool. And the week after that, I told you either turn down your TV or next time you're going to find a porcupine in your goddamn hot tub. Well, that's neither Kantasha Papata nor Motata Kapatapaha. Because I'm here to tell you midnight approacheth. For while you've all been on the 12-step road to Satan's Tavern, I've been keeping track of important end-time indicators. And the end-time is near. Oh, yeah. For according to the AP, or Antichrist Press, and at an Italian restaurant in Florida, the image of Jesus miraculously appeared in a plate of someone's burned manicotti. Not only that, the man who ate it says a chronic stomach ailment he's had since birth vanished. Of course, that's been replaced by mental retardation, but come on, what do you want? This is clearly a sign of the rapture, Mark, for it was prophesied in Revelation 25 or 6:24, and I quoteth, "And heaven did open, and behold, out came a great pan of tubular pasta filled with the blood and body of Christ, cooked at 340 degrees for 1 hour. Let cool for 15 minutes on flat surface before serving. Enjoy. Mancha bevy." End quoteth. Mark, you seem shaken by this important news. Here, let me bless you with a bottle of my complimentary anointing oil.
Well, thanks, Cardinal.
That'll be $5.
Yeah, I thought you said it was complimentary.
Okay, nice shirt. Where's my $5?
What?
Never mind. Remember, Mark, manicotti is the plural of manicotto, which is Italian for muff. Need I say more?
I don't even know what the hell you meant by that.
Neither do I. But that's the mystery of God, loser. Get used to it. You've just been Christed. But none of that matters now, misguided Hebrew person.
Oh, yeah.
For while you're being eternally sodomized at Satan's truck stop with Stucky's pecan log, I'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus and his finicky manservant, Pepe. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell, Seacrest out. How about them Clippers?
The Clippers? Did they win or lose?
What am I, God?
I thought you were, Cardinal. Man, did I do a snap? Was it called a snafu or a gaff? Or I don't know who the hell's fault that was. But maybe in the beginning, when I was introducing your sketch, Jim.
Yes.
Let's go over the introduction that I just blew through.
You said Morning Sedition.
That I just blew through like some sort of cue card reading retard. Like, you think that if I was really engaged with what I was saying that I might not say Morning Sedition? Probably I just went into a time hole, a wormhole.
Did you see me freaking out over behind the board?
I thought you were freaking out like, we don't have time to do the Cardinal. You know, and if I would have let it just slide, you know, the blog people would be like, he said Morning Sedition. It's so sad. He must miss Morning Sedition. I do. But we're working on better hours. I don't think it came out of my mouth, even though I was reading it. Why wouldn't I just?
Do you know
read
how
it?
Many times you said that actual phrase? Like, you know, you did it once a week for 2 years.
Like, so 20 times a day.
Normal for you.
Sometimes I say it like right at the moment of orgasm, which is weird. I say to my wife, we'll be right back. It's Morning Sedition. It's 22 past the hour. It's actually 20.
And now back to a guy who likes to check strange packages at the airport. Mark Maron.
My job. I got to go to the airport tomorrow. I'm flying to Arizona. It's 35 past the hour. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It's my buddy Jim Earle. I'm going to, early in the morning. I'm going to Arizona to see my brother and his three kids. My mother's going to be there. I don't see the kids enough. I think I've seen them once. That's bad when your brother's got three kids and you've seen them once. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Okay, my brother's giving them birthday presents saying they're from me, and it's sad. I have to get out there because when I was in New York, I didn't have time. But now I'm going to go out there and I'm going to develop a relationship with my family.
Now that you're a big star.
Yeah. Shut up. I'm kidding. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say shut up. That's rude. Look, folks, this is a rare thing, but I think it's important because, Franken does it, and I'm not one to do it, but we are open to all ideas here on the Mark Maron Show. That's why we invited our next guest onto the program. He's a former Republican congressman from Ohio. His website is askarepublican.com, so if you have any questions for him, you can get in touch with him there. Representative Richard Martin, thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Mark. It's a real treat to be on, and hello to the fella to your left. James, is that it?
Yes,
James.
It is.
Good to meet you.
Yeah,
good to meet you. Happy St. Patty's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you, Congressman. Yes. Are you Irish?
I am. Yes, uh-huh. I am. I'm very proud of my heritage. You know, there's just a lot of real neat Irish American folks doing some real good work over here in this country. You know, just off the top of my head, you got Sean Hannity. You got you got Bill O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. You got Scott McClellan. Mm. I mean, guys that are just good with facts. You know, you give them a fact and God, they can do anything with it.
They can twist it around like a balloon.
I didn't say that. I just said they're good with facts.
Okay, all right. Well, look, let's get to some issues. I read that the Kansas School Board is now basically forcing kids to get written permission from their parents if they want sex education, which
fantastic,
seems ridiculous to me.
Why was that ridiculous?
Well, I mean, biology is something that we should know. You shouldn't be stabbing in the dark with that.
Please, Mark.
What?
Sex education, you know, kids get a head full of that, you know, then they're going to be curious about evolution.
Right.
But then they're going to be buried under an avalanche of facts, you know, and then you got all these kids are going to college, then who's going to fight the war?
Okay, I understand your logic. I don't know that I would have put it that way, but so the facts are bad because it makes people smart and you need stupid
kids. I'm just saying a preponderance of facts, Mark. It's a...
Too much for
God
a kid.
God darn it, it's a poison. It's a poison. Too much of a good thing.
Sure, I think I get your logic on that. Now you got to... Let's be honest about this thing, though. The South Dakota abortion law, which will not allow a woman to get an abortion, even in cases of rape or incest, that is heinous. I mean, it's completely denies a woman any right over her own body at all.
I've got to disagree.
Why
do you know? Cases of incest, you know, not only does that little kid got a mom and a dad, but he's got an extra dad.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
That's just good news.
Oh, boy.
In cases of rape, I got to be honest. You know, if that gal doesn't want to bring that baby to term, she shouldn't have walked out the house dressed that way.
Oh, that's ridiculous, blaming the victim like that.
Do we want to live in a society of victims, Mark, or do we want to stand up and take responsibility for our own attractiveness?
All right, let me work on that for a minute.
Okay.
Now, Sirhan Sirhan, the gentleman that killed Robert Kennedy, has been denied parole, thank God, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you would agree.
Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, I'm torn on this one.
What do you mean you're torn on this one?
Well, because on the one hand, he should spend the rest of his life in prison for having an ugly first name and having two of it. you know, and being photographed, being a waiter.
All right.
Those two things he should spend life in bars. Uh-huh. But I got to tell you, I wouldn't mind seeing him out because we are a little Kennedy heavy.
What is this one left, and the other one's married to a Republican, kind of?
It's one too many, Mark.
I don't know.
It's one too many.
You seem a little extreme to me. I thought you were a nice man.
You seem a little extreme to me. Let's meet in the middle.
I'm throwing, softballs at you here.
Well, because you're a polite gentleman.
That's what I'm trying to...
You know I'm not going to change you, and you're not going to change me, but God darn it, you know, you take the menorah off the door, and you let me in.
That's right. I opened my show to you to discuss some of these issues. Now, I'm a little concerned myself, you know, and this is not a liberal or a conservative issue,
sure,
about what's going to happen with Iran. I mean, I don't know if they do have nuclear weapons. I don't know if I should be afraid. Are we going to attack? I would hope not.
You know, people say, can we afford a war with Iran? You know, can we? You know, we're up to our eyes in debt with Iraq. Well, let's look at who's fighting for us in Iraq. Kids that can't afford college.
Right.
So here's what we do. To fund a war with Iran, we make high school more expensive.
Wow. That is that's brilliant.
It's
and
innovative.
It's an insidious
We're
brilliance.
Innovative.
Yeah, I can see that.
Innovate with us. Reach across the aisle, Mark.
It's a frightening innovation, I have to say, Congressman Martin.
Ask me what happens if Syria starts poking their head up.
All right, let me try that then. What happens if Syria starts causing some trouble in the Mideast?
Grade school becomes prohibitively expensive.
So then all of a sudden you're going to have kids that are seven over there fighting?
They love machine guns. Look at the Darfur region of Sudan. You've got eight-year-olds fighting. Living out my childhood dream. They've got real rifles. People say, why don't we go over there and stop the genocide? And squash the dream of a child?
Oh, my God.
People say there's not enough food to go around to the people. We should do something. Isn't the more efficient solution to just reduce the number of people?
Huh.
Then there's enough food.
You know what I'm finding? That I've never really had this experience in
Think outside the box.
I'm letting you go because I just realized something. There's no reason, as you said before, to argue with you, because if you just extemporize, I find the disturbing logic that you apply to world issues is very entertaining because it's ridiculous.
It's in your opinion, but, you know, God darn it, Mark, once you realize that it's a global economy and it's an engine, and something's got to go into the engine to drive it.
Well, yeah, I would say, well, we've got a $9 trillion deficit in this country. What about that part of the engine? That seems like the gas tank's empty, my friend.
Not a problem.
Thanks to you people.
Not a problem,
what?
Mark. You know what we do when things get tight? You know, we tighten our belt. You know, we go to our friends, Canada. We say, hey, can we crash here for a while? We sublet our place to the Mexicans.
Mm.
And, you know, we do that till we get back on our feet.
So you're just saying lease the place out?
Absolutely. The Mexicans want to come in. Everybody loves going up to Canada. The Canadians love Americans. Think outside the box.
I'm trying. No, it's, yeah. I just, you know, thank God they put a bunch of money in the new budget to put more, you know, to rebuild the Gulf.
Yes.
Because Katrina was a horrible thing, and Michael Brown,
Not all bad.
What are you talking
about? Why do you paint everything black, Mark?
Because a lot of people were hurt. A lot of people lost their homes.
Let's look at the upside.
Uh-huh.
You look at 8 square miles of flattened homes. I see unlimited potential for cheesecake factories.
Oh, see, that's sad to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. What about all those people? Well, I mean, what about the people that are displaced? What about all the people that weren't able to get out?
I call them riffraff.
No.
A lot of them were on welfare.
Oh.
And I tell you, Mark, I think this whole welfare mentality, it started with the Underground Railroad.
Oh, no.
We applauded people running away from work.
That's horrible.
Breaking the sacred bond between master and slave. Was slavery nice? Of course it wasn't, but property was property, and these folks broke the law, and the cotton industry suffered dearly.
Well, you know,
my great-grandfather lost so many prized slaves, he wasn't able to retire until his mid-30s.
Oh, that's...
I would have another summer home today.
You're a disturbing individual, but I appreciate your point of view. I wanted to put it out there for the people so they can see what you people are really made out of. I'm not going to sit here and have an argument with you.
I appreciate
that. And I appreciate you coming down. We'll do it again sometime. If people want to go to Richard Martin's website, it's askarepublican.com. You can see what he's about. He is retired. You're out here in Los Angeles.
I live in West Hollywood.
Okay.
Mark, I've moved into the belly of the beast to try to turn this blue state red.
Well, good luck with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, go to MySpace/AskARepublican. I'd like to make some friends.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us. It's nice talking to you. We here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society. So every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. This is actually a long time coming because today's Dick of the Day has been a dick for a long time. Possibly all his life. Look, folks, Viacom is the parent company of Comedy Central. Comedy Central was going to run the Trapped in the Closet episode of South Park the day before yesterday. They pulled it at the last minute. As many of you know, the episode tears Scientology and Tom Cruise new asses. Viacom, also the parent company of Paramount. Paramount is putting out Mission Impossible 3 this summer. Tom Cruise is a star of Mission Impossible 3. If the gossip is true, Cruise went into the executive offices of Viacom, might have talked to old man Redstone himself, and said he wouldn't promote Mission Impossible 3 if they didn't pull the South Park episode. And they did. If this is true, Viacom and Comedy Central are dick enablers. But I already knew that. The Mind of Mencia is on the air. Comedy Central claimed they didn't air the show out of respect. They said they didn't air the show out of respect for Isaac Hayes, who left the show last week, most likely at the behest of Scientology. Comedy Central said they wanted to air two of his best episodes as a tribute. Either way, they're still buckling to the power of a cult. Tom Cruise is a huge blockbuster side-tied dick. And for using his power to dictate the decisions of a corporation to accommodate his fanatical religious beliefs, which is right out of the Republican Party handbook, congratulations, Tom Cruise. You're the Mark Maron Show Dick of the Day. Now, I'd like to note here, in a genius move, Matt Stone and Trey Parker made this statement. Quote, "So, Scientology, you may have won this battle, but the million-year war for Earth has just begun. Temporarily anonymizing our episode will not stop us from keeping Thetans forever trapped in your pitiful man bodies. You have obstructed us for now, but your feeble bid to save humanity will fail." End quote. Good for them. Good for them. So, Jim, now, yeah. I think I wanted to address the environmental stuff that we talked about with Lori David, because she sort of got into a little argument with you, but well, I think we should save that.
She got into an argument with herself. I wasn't even in there.
No, I think that's what is true. I think she reacted to something you said. She's got her cause, and her cause is this the virtual march. Her cause is trying to cut down on greenhouse emissions from cars, trying to stop people from wasting energy, getting a little consciousness raised around that. I've always found this to be an interesting thing about liberals and about this issue in particular, because we had an interview with a guy. There was a book that changed my life. It was called The Rebels. What was it? Nation of Rebels. Counterculture became consumer culture. It's by a couple of guys from up in Canada. And they talk about how environmentalism and the trend of environmentalism and the lifestyle of environmentalists is essentially capitalism reinventing itself. That most of the people that are involved in causes and can afford to buy the food that is environmentally proper in relation to that cause are usually upper middle class people who live a certain type of lifestyle. Now, that may be true, but still, in retrospect, in talking to Lori David and understanding what she was saying, we got a lot of letters, and some of them were in defense of you, because what you were saying about meat being an incredible environmental liability for a lot of reasons that you know specifically that I can't address because I don't know them specifically, that is a true thing. But I think that I have a problem with liberals or people who are so, you know, dead set on the idea that there's just everything. If you're not attacking everything, then you're not really doing anything. And a lot of those people just talk. They don't really do anything. But nonetheless, somebody sent this in response to her unplug your cell phone charger claim, which I, of course, did. And I think is not a bad idea, but after I get this. As an engineer, I found her continuous harps about unplugging chargers quite ridiculous. I have a voltmeter, and I know how to use it. I added LED lights to my camper so they would dry dock, run off only batteries for a week. Family of four. So this is a guy who's looking out saving some dough for his family. Now, a charger, when it isn't charging, is either drawing nothing in current or possibly enough to light up the tiny LED that some of them have to indicate that they're plugged in and or charging. Regardless, it's either nothing or enough to light a tiny LED light, which is virtually nothing. I mean, if you left your TV on for 10 minutes, it would draw more amps than a plugged-in charger that isn't charging anything does for a year. Seriously, using that as a repetitive example really makes me fear for the conservation movement, and most especially reinforce the fact that we should all be careful about where and how we get our information. Far be it from me to suggest that a Hollywood producer's wife doesn't know what she's talking about when it comes to electric current usage, but sorry, that was just plain ridiculous. See, this guy might be a conservative, I can't quite tell, but nonetheless, I think it's wrong, because I think that if you raise the awareness, just getting people to think in terms of conservation, in terms of environmental awareness, even on a day-to-day level, you're doing something.
Well, then she shouldn't poo-poo the meat thing.
You're right. She shouldn't poo-poo it, but
which accounts for at least 21% of the greenhouse gases in the global warming. And she doesn't even take that into account.
Well, this guy,
she's a fraud!
He actually commented to you. He's probably not a conservative. We'll read the rest of it in a second because it's addressed to you. It's 50 past. It's a mark.
And now he's fresh chicken. Mark Maron. Maron.
Thank you. 54 past. It's Friday. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Look, we didn't have time to get to a lot of stuff today because it was a short show because of the Clippers. We'll get to the Democrats and the Senate and the possibility of taking that house back. We'll get to a lot of things. My wife, Mishnah Wolf, is here in the room. Is it okay that I call you my wife? Because
yes, Clearly.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me. Thanks for coming by. It's so lovely to see you.
Are you trying to start a fight?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not trying to start a fight, and you can't have a gun. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, what?
Actually, I don't want to forbid you from having a gun. I'm just trying to suggest that we don't get one.
You know what? The smothering's going to it's gonna be a lot more painful, and it's going to take longer.
Yeah, right. So look, here, Jim, look, this guy, I want to finish his email. Jim was right on about the meat thing. Eat one steak or burger, and you've just used up enough energy to make up for the difference between driving a hybrid car or not for a month. In most cases, be sure to check what kind of driving you do before jumping on the hybrid bandwagon, folks. If you do a lot of high speed, that's faster than 40 miles per hour free ride driving, they can save you hardly anything. This guy's a practical guy, rational guy.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Is that your dad?
No, my dad's not practical.
No. Mishnah, I love you. It's nice to see you. We'll have to have you on when you can talk more.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure that you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush welcomed Irish Prime Minister Bernie Ahern on Capitol Hill today for a traditional St. Patrick's Day lunch. Things got off to an awkward start when Bush asked Ahern if he'd, quote, ever... Am I reading the same way? If he'd ever been to the magic spring that the Shamrock Shakes flow from, unquote. That's the same joke? I did? All right, I picked it twice. Good for me. Starbucks will begin using sophisticated tracking devices to monitor coffee shipments out of Guatemala. Starbucks resisted the sophisticated tracking devices for a long time until they were sure they would put all the mom-and-pop tracking device companies out of business. Thank you, baby. She has to do that, though, or else the ride home will be bad. Despite reports to the contrary, a spokesman for Michael Jackson says the singer has not abandoned his Neverland Ranch in Santa Barbara County. Jackson's not leaving his ranch. He's just been overseas studying the Tibetan Book of Little Boy Penis Touching. That's the Mark Maron Short Order News for tonight. They're not going to be able to use those ones on the morning show. That's not going to happen, is it? Is it, Mish?
Nope.
Next week, what do we got? We got Oscar-winning director of Crash, Paul Haggis. I love that guy. We interviewed him once on Morning's Edition. We've got expert pickup artist Neil Strauss. He's still trying to sell that book? That poor guy. Happened the week of Katrina, that book got released. I think it's doing good in Europe. The Game, you liked it, didn't you, Wolf?
Yes, I enjoyed it very much.
He's a good guy, too. He knows a lot about music. Lawton Smalls, Mort Mortensen. And, of course, we'll spin the Wheel of Anger. So, folks, be careful tonight if you're driving right now and you're drunk on green beer. Don't hit me and my wife when we're driving home, and don't hit Jim on his bicycle. He's got a long way to go. You driving behind the bike tonight?
I got the bike tonight. Yeah, it's real funny, Mark.
Woo-hoo!
Last 5 seconds. Hit me again. Go ahead.
I love you, man. Have a good weekend, sheeple.